Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Dave Roberts from Kentucky Dairy Development Council. This week, we will discuss Kentucky's dairy industry and the impact it has on Kentucky agriculture. And as always, we will wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, hello. Jay. How are you?
I'm doing good. I didn't say hello again.
I know. I was expecting it this time, though.
Hope everybody's doing well, and there's been a little bit of rain scattered around some different places. I know some come through this part of the state on Sunday. However, I missed it at my house.
Me too.
I had a lawnmower sitting outside from the day before, and I ran out early that morning to put it up, and that was probably what...
That's why we didn't get the rain, Jay.
I should have just left my mower sitting outside.
Yeah, some of us are living better than the rest of us.
Vicky's, I got four tents.
She's getting it about every time we get any. She's getting a little rain, so it's pretty dry. And we were just in Bowling Green last week, and it's really dry out there. I mean, the grass has already turned brown. All the corn was twisted, so... it could be worse. So
I noticed on my way to Bowling Green going across Todd and Logan County, of course, we had extreme heats. We'd had two back-to-back weeks of 100-plus degree temperatures, and that takes a toll on it in and of itself. But when crops are dry starting off, going into the hot heat like that, it really just it takes the life out of them.
Yeah, so really does.
We're going to need some rain before too long. Personally, I'm glad to see this break in temperature. You know, we're in the western part of the state where we've got a lot of row crops, and with corn fixing to pollinate, having this break in the temperatures will be a big, big help.
Yes, it will.
However, there's a lot of research that shows the variables of this. I've always felt like that temperature at pollination time was probably one of the biggest variables on yield that we have. So, however, once corn enters this reproductive stage and starts making the ear, the water requirements are going to go way, way up.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere like a quarter to 3/10 a day.
A day, right.
So if we don't get some appreciable rain here before too long, we're going to be – it'll start to suffer for sure. Yeah.
Well, the 4th of July weekend's coming up, and usually somewhere in there we usually get – some kind of rain, because there's going to be some kind of celebration going on, and the rain's going to run it. You know, it always happens that way. So
we'd all be okay with that.
I think so. Let's hope we get that 4th of July rain.
Absolutely. I might get out and do a rain dance and see if I can't bring that along.
So. That's right.
Well, we've got a special guest with us here today, Mr. Dave Roberts from the Kentucky Dairy Development Council. Dave, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well.
We're glad to have you with us. Dave is resident of Livingston County, Kentucky, and Dave, I'll let you tell a little bit about your farm background and where your hometown is and how you originally came to Kentucky.
Okay. Originally my family, we had a dairy up in northern New Jersey, and right in the very northern tip of New Jersey. And it was along the Delaware River, and it was kind of the same thing, maybe as like the land between the lakes. The federal government came in, decided they're going to put a park in. So they bought up on the New Jersey and the Pennsylvania side of the Delaware for so many miles, and most of our working farm laid in the borders of what they wanted. So we finally came to terms and sold them the farm. Originally, they thought they may want to have a working farm there, so we kind of let that play out for a while, and then they decided, no, that'd be fine.
So we had everybody wants to farm until they start farming.
Yeah, so
that's exactly,
you know,
right.
Well, we decided then that we better start looking seriously for another place. And about that time, I was I'd finished up 2 years at Copleskill State University. It's a part of the New York State university system. And at that time, it was just a 2-year school, and I went there for dairy and animal science. And at the time, I transferred to Cornell. My roommate up there was a good friend of mine. He had applied and got accepted at Murray State University. And So I think Cobleskill and Murray State had something going on with they'd get students down, there seemed to be several of them, into their ag education program. So that's what he was in. After a semester at Cornell, which drained my bank account because I wasn't there on scholarship, and and the atmosphere, I just didn't take to it real well. So I laid out a semester of work, and I asked him, I said, what's it like down there at Murray? He said, well, I like it pretty good. I said, well, could you send me a catalog? And he did, back when they had catalogs.
That's exactly what I was
So in the meantime, so I looked that up, and I applied, got accepted, and my cousin, who was graduating high school at the same time, he was looking out in Missouri and different places. I said, well, why don't you apply at Murray? And he did, and he got accepted. So I'd never been to Kentucky, and my cousin either. And a couple of days before registration, we got in the car and headed to Kentucky. So it was sight unseen, you know, going on the recommendations of my roommate. So, but we got down here and just loved it, and finished my last 2 years at Murray and graduated. Went back home, and we were, you know, getting pretty serious about looking up. We looked up New York State and Pennsylvania. You sell a lot of registered cattle in those places, so we knew people. But finally, I said to my dad and uncle, I said, they were in partnership up there. I said, would you mind looking down in Kentucky? I said, it's pretty nice down there. I said, and the winters are much better than New York State. I'd spend a few winters up there, you know. And so they said, yeah, we'll look. So came down, found a place in Livingston County, and we moved 100 head of we had registered Holsteins, moved 100 head of milk cows down, 100 head of replacement heifers down, and started milking there in the spring of in 1978. So I've been there ever since, until we sold out in 2003, I think it was.
Okay. I was telling Dave and Vicki, you know, before the show, my earliest remembrances of you when I was the ag agent in Callaway County, and we held the district dairy show there at the time, and I remember you all coming down and bringing calves and showing, and that goes way back. You know, I'm thinking, and I don't know this to be fact, but dairyman there in Callaway County that I worked with for years, Jim Staler. Jim was an out-of-state person who came into school to Murray as well. Were y'all at Murray at the same time?
No, he was a little bit ahead of me.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not sure how many years, but, and I didn't know that until we, you know, at some co-op meetings and stuff, and we got talking, and he was just over the line from New Jersey, and I think it was around Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. I didn't know if you all came there at the same time or in and around the same time, but I remembered him coming from that general area. So.
Right.
Neat stuff. Jim was a good guy, somebody I worked with a lot when I was down there. So.
Yeah, fine fella.
Talk to us a little bit about KDDC and your role with the Kentucky Dairy Development Council.
Okay. I'm one of four consultants with the Kentucky Dairy Development Council, and the council is a statewide organization. Anybody that's milking cows in the state is actually a member. It began, I think, it was put together around 2005. Had a group of producers come together and dairy industry people, and decided that the dairy industry needed an organization to represent the producers in the state. So they drew some stuff up and went to Ag Development Board and got approval onto it for funding. And then in January 1st, 2007, there was four of us consultants that were hired that covered different parts of the state. And then we have an executive director that kind of oversees and runs things. So currently, H. Barlow is our executive director. We got Patty Holbert. She was just hired this year as a consultant in kind of the central part of the state. Beth Cox, she's in kind of the east central part. And then Jennifer Hickerson is in the northern part of the state. So that's kind of our territories. But we do anything that has to do with dairy. So when I took the job, Roger Thomas was the executive director, and said, "Well, you know, what exactly do you want us to do?" He says, "Anything that has to do with dairy." He said, "If you pull up," he says, "and they're hauling hay, and it looks like there's storm clouds on." He says, "You help them haul hay." Yeah. So, and actually, I did do that here in Christian County one day. It was some Amish hauling straw, and I think they were having more fun out of it than me, because they put me back in the hay mow and stacking. After a few loads, I said, "Fellas, I think I need to move on." So
I've done my part.
Before I have a heart attack here. Right. You know, they were a lot younger than me, so
yeah. Friendships only go so far.
Yeah, right. I did my part.
So. But you know, that kind of speaks to the fact that yourself, and I know Patty, I know Beth. Beth's actually in my home county. I knew her father-in-law when they were milking years ago. That kind of speaks to the fact that you all develop relationships with the people that you work with and serve, much like a county agent does, in an educational role. You help keep information to these people and help them keep them involved in what's going on. And especially here in Christian County, where you spend a lot of your time, I reckon it's still the number one dairy county in the state as far as numbers of dairies.
It is.
And that's mostly due to the Amish and Mennonite dairies that are here in the county. Speak a little bit about how those relationships work and some of the services that KDDC helps to provide for farmers.
Okay. Originally, we had a program at the beginning that was it was designed to help producers increase the volume of milk and their quality of milk. One of the requirements was to be on DHIA, herd record keeping and stuff. The other part was, it was a monthly program that if they made 10% above the month from the previous year, then they would get, I don't know, like 25 cents a hundredweight more. And then it had a second tier if they got 15% maybe more milk than the previous year. They would get a premium for that. And then also, if they kept their somatic cell counts down to a certain level, they would get a premium on that. So it was really a pretty lucrative program for those that, you know, tried. The good thing was it was financed, half of it through the milk markets contributed half the money for it, and the other half was through the Ag Development Fund funded the other half. So I think it was, if I remember correctly, the Ag Development folks said that it was one of the most successful programs they ever had, because it brought outside money in. And really leveraged their money to benefit producers. And that really was a good program at the beginning for all us consultants that came in, and they didn't know who we were. And, we were just meeting people. I knew some, but, more or less just making acquaintance with them and stuff.
Yeah. And getting your foot in the door.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, yeah.
And like, gave you had something nice to talk about.
Yeah.
That they were very interested in.
So
they
put a little money in their pocket.
Exactly.
You know? So,
yeah.
And so that helped a whole lot after, that first check came in. Then they think, yeah, and then their neighbors, So yeah, I believe I will sign up on that program. So, but it's been a great experience. Most working in Western Kentucky here, I think when I began west of the lakes, which used to be a lot of dairies, when I began, there was still around 40-some dairies over there. Now we're down to two. So,
if I can ask, what two are those? What counties are they in anyway?
Ballard County, we got the Coopers,
right.
And then M.D. Crum, who just took over Freeman Brundage's dairy,
right,
down there in the south tip of
Water Valley, down
in Water Valley.
I know Freeman well. Once again, when I worked in Callaway County, Freeman was one of the producers. He wasn't in Callaway County, but he was big buddies with my predecessor, Ted Hired.
Yeah.
That's where Ted kept his show cattle and all, and
yep.
And they traveled a lot together, and I got to know Freeman and his daughters, and
yep.
So watch them girls grow up really around the show circuit. So.
Yeah.
Well, you talked about the bringing the matching money in. I've heard producers say it time and time again. It was a win-win situation, not only for the fact that it put dollars in people's pockets, but at the same time, we were greatly improving the quality of milk and the product that was coming out of West Kentucky.
Right, right.
Big things. So, you know, the manufacturing scene has changed quite a bit in West Kentucky as well. Is there still the plant in Murray, is it still operational?
Yeah, it is. Saputo is still, and they take quite a bit of milk, but our problem is that we have local milk that's probably about 20 minutes away, if you get from Trigg, and that milk, is going to Nashville or somewhere else, and the milk coming into Murray is all coming out of Indiana, of northern Indiana.
Mm-hmm. We had a split here in Christian County at one time, even before the organic scene. That kind of made a three-way split out of it, but a lot of milk went to Madisonville, to the plant there. And a lot went to Nashville to Purity. And there was kind of a split in the county at one time and you could almost draw a line between the different types of producers as to who went where.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then, of course, the organic thing has kind of changed things here in the past few years as well.
It has. It was really booming for a while. Then back, was it? I think 2014, we had some high milk prices, and the margin between organic and the other got real close. So some of them thought, well, I think I can do as well and not, be regulated at the point organic producers are if I just milk conventional. So they left, and then, of course, milk prices, as they do, dropped again. So, but I think there's quite a bit of organic milk in the state, not quite as much, around here as there was, but they've got some good producers. It's a good market. I think COVID, they said, helped the market some. People were staying home and stuff, but it helped the milk market, as a whole, really. Yeah. But it increased a pretty good percentage on the organic side.
Dave, explain to us a little, to our listeners and to us as well, the difference between grade A dairies or if they still have that. I mean, kind of explain to us the differences in dairies.
Yeah, they used to be grade A, grade B, and you could milk either one. I think there may still be one grade B in the state, but most everything is grade A. Mm. Your milk, if it's grade A under that inspection and meets the standard, it can pretty much go anywhere in the U.S. Grade B is primarily if it's going to a cheese plant, something like that.
Okay.
That's changed a lot too, Jay. It was 'cause I think we moved down here. There was quite a few grade B dairies.
Mm-hmm. I was fixing to say 15, 20 years ago, a lot of the Amish that I work with in Trigg County, some of them were grade B.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I didn't know what if it had changed that much in this time.
Yeah.
It sounds like it.
It's pretty much due to the market, the demand. It's what's required, on the market level. It's we don't have as many cheese plants in Kentucky anymore, and so that the demand wasn't there.
Yeah.
You talk about the demand changing. Probably the biggest change that I've seen in the dairy industry in Kentucky, in my career or in my lifetime, either one, is physically the number of dairies that we have. We've seen a great reduction through the years in the total number of dairies.
Yep.
And a lot of that is because of economics. A lot of it is because, kids leave the farm and take on other jobs. But above and beyond that, because of economies of size versus scale, we've seen a centralization of the dairy industry in certain parts of the country.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about what you've seen kind of through the years as far as the fluctuation in the size and the amount of dairies.
Sure. I want to say when we moved to Kentucky in 1978, there was in the neighborhood of 7,800 dairies in Kentucky at that time. And, of course, it slowly dwindled. When I took the job with KDDC in 2007, there was 1,750, I think, or in that neighborhood in the state of Kentucky. We're currently just under 400. dairies in the state. So, in fact, you know, Kentucky used to be called Little Wisconsin for the number of dairies
right,
that were here.
Right.
And we had cheese plants and stuff in different regions of the state. A lot of that's due to, you know, the age of the dairymen, you know, in their retirement. And like you said, the kids leaving the farm and doing something different. A lot of it in recent years due to economics, because we had about 5-6 years of low milk prices, and people just didn't want to dip into their equity anymore to keep going. And it's an odd thing, because the Southeast is a good market for dairy. We're deficit in Kentucky. We don't make enough milk to fill the needs of Kentuckians, but milk shifts south, so our milk, you know, goes to Nashville and stuff, and then we have milk that comes in from Indiana and Illinois, some Michigan, and like you said, the centralization is, and you know, northern Indiana, Michigan, that area has just been growing. They don't have the population to send the milk or sell the milk to,
right.
So it goes south. So,
what is the average herd size? I know in of a dairy, you know, just an average. I know that it used to be somewhere, what, around 110 or a little less, or, I mean, is that still where we are, or is that kind of, has the dairies gotten bigger or smaller?
Yeah, in general, the English dairies, which is other than Amish and Mennonite, have grown some. But most Amish and Mennonite are usually around 40 to 55 cows in that range. Now we have the folks over around Guthrie and stuff, and they'll milk more. They'll milk 100 and some, you know. But I think for the state, we're still around the same. We're still around 110, something like that. So,
yeah, you think about tobacco. You know, that's where right. my mind was going. You know, when we, you know, it's the different, but we used to have a whole lot more tobacco growers too, and we've seen over the years that industry, you know, has gotten small. You have less producers, but those producers are growing more acres.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and you would think maybe the dairy was doing that too, but there's a whole lot of difference in those two commodities as well, and they both have require a whole lot of labor, which is, you know, that's tough. Labor yeah. is, in any industry, you know, labor is an issue that we talk about all the time across the board, and it seems to be getting worse. I think with COVID, we all know that got worse, mm-hmm. and we haven't rebounded from that. And we've right. all seen that in every industry and shopping centers and restaurants across the board, and it's no different in agriculture. I think, actually, agriculture's always had, that's always been a problem, is finding that labor. And you know, with livestock, I think that even is harder, because you can't leave. You can't leave. I mean, those animals has got to be taken care of, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think it's any different, especially for the English dairies, as far as labor goes, that they're still having problems finding help as much as anybody, and they've turned to H-2A workers in some instances as well, mm-hmm. you know. So I think a lot of those labor-intensive things have gone to industries, have gone to more H-2A type labor, don't you think, Dave?
Or? Yeah, they have. The problem in the dairy industry is that they don't really qualify for H-2A workers. So in certain instances where the dairy, you know, is diversified, has row crop and tobacco and stuff like that, they can get some help through the H-2A. But
yep.
Dairy isn't an approved use. And, of course,
right.
it's like you said, it's, you know, 24/7, 365. So the H-2A is limited on you know, the time that they can spend.
So they really got to be diversified then to get those
right.
H-2A to be able to help them. And they can't come for 12 months, isn't that right?
I mean,
they
correct.
Got to rotate out after a certain time.
Right.
And dairy's a year-round
yeah.
production
mm-hmm.
cycle, and that's really what makes the difference there. If they have row crops, if they have tobacco or some things like that they could utilize them in, then they can use them through the farm. But
right.
it's a big difference. And you know, really, that I see as being a major difference between our Amish dairies and Mennonite dairies here in this end of the state or across the state is you see a lot more of that family labor,
yeah,
combined labor, and not necessarily hired labor off the farm. Finding what I call that skilled labor that can work with livestock, work with a dairy, is hard to find, and that's partly because we don't have the number of dairies we used to have. I used to milk for people on the weekends when so they could go out of town, you know, take that little trip. But I grew up around it. I grew up with family milking, so I was around it and knew what I was doing.
Right.
You just can't find that help everywhere. So.
Yeah. And, I mean, we're getting more dairies that are relying on robots to do the milking for them. So,
sure.
And probably going to get some more.
Really?
We've got some good English, some very good English dairies that are struggling really, really bad with the labor issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those are the type of dairies you don't want to leave the industry just because of that.
Well, they're carrying the bulk of the production.
Yeah.
Really.
They are.
So.
I mean, I told somebody one time that when I used to work at a hog farm, and I told the only thing worse than being at a hog farm would be milking cows because they have to be taken care of, just like the hogs, they have to be taken care of. But the cows is twice a day, at least twice a day, every day, seven days a week. So, you know, I get up early enough in the morning that I could milk cows. I don't ever want to milk cows. But, I you know, it's one of those things. It's very labor-intensive, and you got to love what you're doing.
Yeah. It's labor-intensive, and it's a very confining lifestyle because of that 365 – you know, time commitment. My wife grew up on a dairy in Barron County. And when you had Christmas, when you had Thanksgiving, and you want to go see the grandparents who are only an hour away, you get up and milk in the morning, get all your work done. You hope to be there by 10, but by 2, you're leaving and heading home because it's time to get ready to milk
again. Yeah.
That's if you're only milking twice a day. So
yeah, that's right.
You know, and that's a quick question. A lot of people may not realize, but there are dairies that milk 3 times a day on 8-hour intervals. How many of the producers do you see in our end of the state that are doing that? I really think it's more of an English thing, and it's more of a suit your not only your production practices, but your herd. You got to have the cows that have that ability.
Yeah, that's right. The genetics and of course the nutrition's got to be there. And we had we always take a trip up to Wisconsin World Dairy Expo, and we took a couple bus loads this one year, and we had quite a few Amish from this area, and had several come back and start milking immediately,
really?
3 times a day, and it's about a 10 to 15% increase in yield,
production.
You know, by milking them 3 times a day. Cows like it better because you know they're not stressed for just doing it twice, and so. But the Amish, the non-electric Amish and stuff that were doing it, that worked okay until you know spring planting and you know.
Yep.
It the harvest time of the year, they just don't have the help to do it. But there's a lot of English dairies that do it and do it year round. Some of them will do it the fall after the heat leaves and do it until spring when it starts to heat up. Because you know traditionally you don't get the volume of milk in the heat, and so they don't. You know it's not necessary to milk them 3 times a day then. But it is a economic advantage if you have the labor to do it. So
you mentioned nutrition there, and I think that's a key thing is you know with the livestock of any sort, but you've got to match the nutrition to the production that you're wanting to have.
Yeah.
And that's a key component that sometimes we may not think about it that way, but if you said it exactly right, if the nutrition's not there, then you're not going to be able to milk 3
that's
times
right.
a day. And that I think that's a huge key to being successful, to be doing that, and then of course the labor too. But
my first experience with, or really my only experience milking in a 3 times a day system, I went to Eastern Kentucky University in the Stateland area back when it was on campus. We milked 3 times a day, but it was a little different setup. The cows performed better, and not just from a milk production standpoint, but it was easier on the cows. They were not they were really. Just an exhibited less stress overall. But one of the big reasons for that, we were on a computerized feeding system. All the cows had a chains and were microchipped, so they could eat basically whenever they want till their number was met for the day, their ration was met for the day, and then they could walk in that feeder as many times as they want to, and wasn't no feed for
them. Yeah.
But that was a very laid back system. All the cows right there in confinement, no pasture at all, and it worked really, really good for that situation. Yep. That dairy's, I say, long since gone now. It's rebuilt and moved out on Eastern's farm, but at one time it was right in the middle of town, and that made for sometimes tense relationships with your neighbors. We were right across the road from the football stadium. And if it was manure spreading day and that happened to coincide with an OVC football game, you got phone calls. So we learned real quick to separate those two. But
yeah, Dave talked with us a little bit about, you know, we're kind of talking about nutrition and stuff, how feed prices have affected these folks in the dairy industry and maybe some other input prices. But I know feed prices, because that nutrition level's got to be up there. So, you know, talk with us a bit how that's affected folks.
Yeah. Well, nutrition with dairy cows, you know, in hard times, the last place you want to cut is the is the nutrition on the cow that's making you the money. I mean, you can't there may be case where you could substitute one commodity for another and get by with it, but for the most part, you want to stay on top of the nutrition and make sure she's producing all she needs to and stays healthy. But, you know, last few years with the corn price up, bean price up, so bean meal's high, that makes other people, or makes folks look to other commodities and stuff maybe, but it kind of all centers around the value of a corn and bean meal. So, you know, that price goes up when the other goes up.
Cotton meal goes up.
Cotton meal, everything goes up. So,
but, and even the byproducts are expensive now. You know, corn gluten, soybean hulls, all those kind of things. I'm not real sure how folks are going to be able to make it, to be honest with you, because we got a beef herd there at the house, and me and my son were talking about, you know, what are we going to wean the steers and sell them? Or are we going to be able to feed them? You know, are we going to be able to afford to feed them this fall, you know, with the way prices are going? So I got a feel for those folks in the dairy industry where they're buying feed all the time, whereas we just buy once a year, you know, kind of deal.
Well, you know, you can save yourself some by contracting ahead and stuff like that, but that'll last as long as when prices stay up, you know, the contract runs out and you're into something a lot higher.
Yep.
But it's and in the past, you know, when we were milking stuff, I could call cotton gins down in Tennessee and in Arkansas and stuff and get semi loads of whole cotton seed to feed, which is a great feed. But then I guess some of the larger companies saw there could be some money made there, so you had McNess and some of these just go in and buy up all the cotton seed, and then you had to go through them. And like I said, they kind of tied it to the price of the other commodities. So for individual producers to go out and try to find a deal, it's harder to do. So
absolutely.
What about other supply issues? I mean, you know, it's been a nightmare with the supply chain. We hear that a lot, you know, issues in the supply chain. You know, talk about, has that been an issue in the dairy industry with any supply chain issues, whether it be feed or otherwise?
Yeah, they've had the same problems most everybody else has. If it's parts for, you know, milking machines or, you know, vacuum pumps, whatever it may be, you know, you didn't think anything of it before. You just call up and get it. Now you may not be there.
And maybe 6 weeks before you can get it.
Right, exactly. So that is an issue. On the other side, you talk about supply, milk hauling has become a huge issue in the state because with the less dairies, they're more spread out maybe. And there's a lot of pressure, say, on a dairy that's, you know, 40 miles from the last pickup to go get him and then come back. That you better have a lot of milk to put on that truck when they get there. And the industry's going more to tanker loads. So you may have a tanker sitting on the farm and you're a direct load. You're milking, that milk's being chilled and put in that tank, And then you just have somebody come and with a tractor, pick it up and haul it to the processor. Now, obviously, in this area, there's a lot of Amish. That's, you know, milking 45 or 50 cows. That's not going to happen. But hauling rates have gone up, you know, and you can understand the logistics of it that they would have to. But that's another, you know, increase in what the producers have to pay to continue on, along with. Now, right now, we probably have the best milk prices ever in history. About the first of the year, they started going up. And this is the fifth month in a row that the milk volume produced is less than it was the year before. This is nationwide.
Right.
So there's a becoming kind of a shortage, therefore, the you know, the price being up. And that's also on the world market, which our price is anymore. We have 15 to 18% of our milk being produced going to exports, so that's a huge part of our milk price. But the European Union they've put regulations in that have put a strain on producers, environmental regs and stuff. So you've had a lot of them go out, and the ones that are there, you know, haven't increased. And I guess in Europe it's a little harder to increase, so they're looking more to the world market. New Zealand, which is usually a huge player in powdered milk that gets exported, their production has been down the last few years, and it doesn't really look like it's going to be going back up. So the higher milk prices now are due to just a more of a tighter supply.
I think if there was a take-home message that consumers need to be aware of when they see these high milk prices and high egg prices and other products in the store, the farmer is receiving pretty good prices for their product right now, but it's costing them more to produce that product than it ever has in history. And an increasing amount of those costs, as you just said, is in the hauling and the marketing, not necessarily the production or the sales.
Right.
That all adds to that final cost, and it's a tough market for everybody right now. Farmers are receiving some good prices at grain farmers, you know, best prices we've had in a while, but with diesel prices, with land rents, with other input costs and availabilities of those inputs, it's costing a producer more to make that product now than it ever has.
Well, and it's we've talked about it before, I know we've said it, but you know, they're buying their inputs at a retail price, and you're selling your product at a wholesale price.
And paying the shipping both
and
ways.
And paying the shipping both ways. So, yeah. You know, when you think about it that way, I mean, the farmers don't really get that much, as much as what the non-agricultural people may think. And, you know, June is actually dairy month here, you know, and so we don't want to not say that, bring that up, and give a shout out to those dairy farmers out there, because it's not an easy life. It's not an easy job by any means. I think it's a way of life, and as you all alluded to earlier, you know, it's a family affair kind of thing, and I think most dairies started that way, and I think that probably there's still a lot of maybe family farm dairies out there, but it just requires a little bit more than family and got to get some more labor in there. But it is a way of life, and that's why those folks stay with it and continue to do it. It's
I'm sure glad there's people like that
me
like
too.
To do that, because I mean, that's, I would do it, I wouldn't like it, but I would do it, you know, one of those kind of things. So it's kind of like having 4-H agents. They serve a very special role, and I'm glad there's people like that, because I'm not one of them.
Yes.
So
I agree.
But it's kind of the same way with the dairy thing. I mean, it and I had to tell this story on Dave. I was telling my wife this morning that I was going to see Dave, and I knew that she knew him because she's from Livingston County, and she got to telling me that they used to go over and they used to have some get-togethers and different things there at Dave's house, and when they were milking, and of course my wife's parents had beef cows, and she said when she was little she never did understand why her cows couldn't do the same thing as Dave's cows. But a good story, and that goes back to the family thing, Vicki, the folks that get together, and we just probably just don't do that enough anymore, I would say, you know. But Just an interesting story from I guess my connection to Dave there a little bit. So
it truly is a family affair. You know, I've had the good fortune for nearly my whole career to work the Youth Dairy Show and a lot of years the Open Dairy Show and the North American Dairy Show here in Kentucky, and at the State Fair and at the North American. When you work with these families, you develop a relationship for them, and by far, that's the thing that I look forward to going to the State Fair for, or when I worked the North American. That's the thing I look forward to, was getting to see those friends, getting to see those people. You know, Dave, now that I'm in a different county, we may go months at a time without seeing one another, but I know in August I'm going to see you at the State Fair.
That's right, yeah.
When I was here in Christian County, I saw you pretty often.
yeah.
Well, I'll see you at the State Fair this year because I'm joining the Dairy Show team. So
Vicky's our new help. She's going to help the Youth Dairy Show this year and hopefully bring some organization to our crew. We need that. Now, we had a lot of good organization. Amber Huffman, of course, has moved on from her role as 4-H agent to extension administrator. And Amber was our organization for a lot of years and was very, very good at it. So, you know, Dave, one of the things we like to do, we always wind this show up with a timely tip. And typically our tip will be for producers and something timely, you know, to the time of the year that we're recording in. This time I wrote something just a little bit different, and our timely tip is really more for our consumers out there, and that is to support your local dairy producers from across the state. We've got a lot of producers. I know some here in Christian County, for instance, right now, who have entered into the world of vertical integration. They're actually keeping milk and processing milk. We know different ones across the state that are doing that. They're making their own labeled ice creams. They're making their own cheeses. And COVID taught us that our food supply can be pretty touchy if we're not careful. And I would encourage anybody across the state who would hear this or anywhere, support your local farmers. If there's a local product that can be bought from a local producer, buy that. It's not only going to help that producer out, but it's going to put dollars back into your local economy and help strengthen it as well too. Remember, it's those local businesses that are sponsoring your little league teams and helping your kids out with camp scholarships. It's not always the big corporations. So
that's right.
That's kind of the way that we like to wind this show up, and that would be my timely tip for the week. So
Dave, touch on real quick while we just got a minute or two about the percentages of those folks that are milking that are involved in this vertical integration kind of system.
Good question.
It's a small percentage, but we're probably looking at 1-2%. There's more interest in it in all. In fact, we're working with University of Tennessee and University of North Carolina on a federal grant to encourage that and prevent, present information and stuff for folks thinking about doing that, getting them in contact with others that have done it to help them. So, and it's an ongoing grant. So, we're doing that. And right close by, it hasn't been an individual. It's a group of Amish have put that cheese plant down, South Todd County.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Jay, you loaned us the van to take them up to up to Wisconsin on a fact finding kind of.
I wanted to go on that trip, and as it turned out, I couldn't go. I had some things come up that wouldn't allow me to go out of town. But I did help provide y'all the transportation.
Yeah, and we're so appreciative of it because out of that we have the interest that the Amish have gone together and put money together and built this cheese house. And I want to say that, and I've been to quite a few cheese houses. This is one of the nicest ones I've ever seen. And it's got a, retail area, but you can view into where they make the cheese. Their cheese is amazing. Omar Stolfus, who's their main cheese maker, he is very particular, and he works very hard to get it right, so the quality and the consistency and stuff. But it's just something pretty amazing. It's kind of a hidden jewel here close by, that And they, you know, you can take your kids there. They have Cheney's ice cream there. With, you know, Elizabeth and Carl there. They have a value-added operation that was the ice cream. Now Elizabeth's gone into the bottling and stuff. So it's growing, that type of thing. And I will say, here in Kentucky, we've, you know, we don't hold second to anybody on you know, quality.
Yep.
So.
That's right.
And that's what makes a product sell, and that's what gets the word out, is the quality of the product. And if you have people that are meticulous about, you know, producing that product, that'll really help, and hopefully folks will get more involved in that and start supporting some more local dairy operations.
They did say at Country View, the cheese house, once the COVID had hit and stuff, that they, of course, they lost sales and delis and stuff like that. But all of a sudden, the foot traffic coming in there from local folks just, you know, went up a great deal.
Yep,
so
that's great.
You're right.
That's right. Well, I'm glad to see that was the end effect of some of those COVID activities, is we've seen a growth in local sales like that. Freezer beef, cheese,
right,
locally grown produce, those are all things in this area, and I feel like in other areas too that have had a little bit of stimulation from folks who wanted to make sure they could secure their food. So, good stuff. Well, does anybody else have anything they want to add? Well, Dave, we appreciate you being here with us today and taking the time to record our show. We want to thank you and thank our hosts for all the information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.